Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 276. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors and specifically Train Heroic for bringing these episodes to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and Ben and Josh and everybody out at Train Heroic, just fantastic people. And I think they have the best product on the market. So if you're in the market for something along those lines, reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by a friend of mine, Derek Hansen. He's a strength and conditioning coach, consultant, extraordinaire up in Canada. We've spoken at some clinics together. He's spoken at one of our play labs. Just a great guy, very sharp, brings a lot of unique views to the table. And just excited to have you on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ron. Always interested in speaking with you and sharing ideas. And it's just great to connect with you whenever I get a chance.
Well, man, we talked about, just being a consultant. I mean, you've worked with sports and athletes in almost every genre. You've worked with actresses and actors. I mean, you've done a little bit of everything. You're the head strength coach of Simon Fraser at one point. You've got your own website. I usually ask which experience best defines you as a coach, but rather than that, and rather than, I know track and field, you being a competitive athlete and track and field, your extensive background there, which sport or which client that best taught you, best developed you into who you are today? Like, what, when you really look back and say, this sport taught me a lot about strength and conditioning, or this client taught me a lot about strength and conditioning, which one would that be?
I think it's going to be those situations where I actually volunteered as a track coach. And I just, I had this sort of daily routine of monitoring an athlete or a group of athletes. There wasn't a clock attached to it. There wasn't I only have 60 minutes with this person, then I see them in 2 days. Or it was like pretty much every day there was contact, there was work, and we did as much work as we had to do. So this was on my own time, and I had people for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And that's where you really learn how to do your craft. Because the stopwatch or the high jump bar or the long jump pit determines the measuring tape measures you. Right. And it's sometimes you get, as a strength coach, the best thing you could do is attach yourself to a good head coach who can recruit and get good players. And that way you look a lot better. But when it's just you and the tape measure or the stopwatch, now you kind of go, ooh, do I really know what I'm doing? And so those instances really kind of shaped me and make me a little more critical about how I, evaluate myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, most of my career has been in football, obviously, and so it's a team-based sport where you can hide a little bit. You can hide a little bit in terms of, the wins and losses don't necessarily depend on any one position. But now, consulting and working with some of these teams, that these individual sports, some of these Olympic athletes, you're right. I mean, that's a defined success line between, success and failure, and you got to deliver as a coach, that's for sure.
Yeah, and even like you said, like your wins and losses, but your losses sometimes may define you in a way that's not true as well, because you just don't have the players, and you're a hell of a strength coach, but you got to choose your jobs very carefully. And I think that's, jumping ahead, that's a good piece of advice. Like, just because somebody offers you a strength and conditioning job in the NFL for the last place team, right, doesn't necessarily mean it's a great job. So you got to be careful.
I've been offered those jobs before. Well, you've obviously had a tremendous career, and it's ongoing, but I mean, you don't get the type of you know, recognition, accolades, the whole deal without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made as a strength and conditioning coach and how you learn from it?
I think it's kind of isolating yourself. I know how, you know, you had said you work mainly with football and I think people get into these tracks where you're like, this is what I do and this is what I'm always going to do. And it's very hard to diverge from that. And so whether I was in track or whether I was working more closely with football, I think a lot of the time you think, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And you kind of lose sight of everything around you happening around you. And I think the mistakes I've had would be where you kind of get a little overconfident and you just go, okay, I'm really good at this. And so I'm just going to keep doing this because, you know, it seems to be working. And you kind of lose sight of other things that you could be working on. And, you know, or you have a good athlete or a bunch of good athletes. You're like, oh, I know what I'm doing now. And it just so happened that you had the fortune of being attached to these athletes. Right. And I just think, yeah, you just have to be careful and have a broader perspective and make sure that you're watching your own back to some degree, or have people around you that you can ask, like, hey, you know, what do you think about my career and how I'm doing? Is there anything that you see as an external person that maybe I'm missing out on? And I think that's the toughest thing right now is, you know, obviously when you're doing well, you want to run with it, but at the same time, you got to check yourself. And I think those are the situations where I kind of got into trouble where I didn't really check myself and thought, yeah, I'm doing really well. And then you don't really find out till it happens, like, you know, maybe a year beyond or 2 years, where like, geez, you know, it's not going well now.
That's
and
right.
It's something that you could have fixed like 2 or 3 years ago, but it, you know, it's almost too late once the momentum starts. Right. So,
absolutely.
You know, I think it goes back to these ideas that you got to surround yourself with good people that can give you good advice and, you know, won't shy away from telling you the truth maybe. So.
No, I couldn't agree with more. I think it is important for you to do what you're passionate about. So obviously I played college football. That's a passion of mine. It's more than just the sets and reps and the four walls of the weight room and all those things. But you can't be a one-trick pony. I mean, you're going to have a very short career if that's all you can do. So if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, you better be developing skill sets outside of that, or you're going to find yourself out of work and possibly changing professions because of it. I couldn't agree.
Especially for a strength coach. Because if you're out of the pro game or you can't find a job in college, like, you have to be resourceful like yourself, and you have to, okay, what can I do in the private sector? What other industries can I work with to, you know, kind of maximize my value? And if you don't have those skill sets, then it's a very insecure place.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, getting outside influence, you know, on your own career, but also, you know, when you're in the trenches, when you're at Simon Fraser at Tennessee or the teams that we've been at, it is great. I mean, it's humbling and it takes a lot of self-worth and self, you know, identity to be able to allow somebody from the outside to come in and evaluate your program. But that's an important process, you know, having a mentor for growth. What you're in a situation now, and I'm in a similar situation where you're going into some highly qualified, very good coaches that are running good programs, but are looking for growth, or you're being maybe hired by somebody outside of the weight room to come in and to kind of evaluate. Talk a little bit about the role of a consultant and how you can bring value to a strength conditioning program, but also the mindset that a strength conditioning coach should have about those opportunities.
Yeah, I think the thing that you're always trying to do is you're trying to add value. And sometimes if you come in and you see a lot of things that maybe aren't as good as they could be, your job isn't necessarily to go like, oh, this sucks, and you could improve this, because then nobody really likes that. Like, you know, obviously people want to hear the truth, but really they don't want to hear the truth. So you have to kind of craft things in a way that are a little more productive, a little more positive, and say like, hey, you're doing this well. I think if you kind of added a little bit of this, this would be good too. And, you know, I try to connect a little more with these people, you know, the medical staff or whoever. And you just try to, I think, explore things as opportunities rather than, you know, this is like, this is not very good. You guys aren't doing good at this and this. And I think that's the most important thing, because you know how it is. Like when you ask somebody's opinion, you don't want to hear negative stuff. And if you do, it's very easy for people to shut down. So, you know, I think I try to approach it with a very sort of positive mindset and say, okay, you know, most of the time when people bring me in, they're probably doing a lot of good stuff already. So it's the first thing is to point out what they're doing well. Absolutely. And build on that. Right. Because, you know, for the most part, people are pretty good. So, but I think if you go in with a bit of an ego and you're like, I want to be the guy that solves everything, it's really not going to work out that well. You're not going to get a lot of return business, and you're not going to make a lot of friends in the profession. So, and quite honestly, if I'm usually brought in, like I'm usually brought in by the strength coach, and there's a little bit of trust there where they think, okay, I'm going to bring him in because he's going to help me. Whereas maybe if I was brought in by a GM or an athletic director more in an auditing role, that's a little different, right? So I think it depends on who brings you in as well. I know some people who've been brought in by head coaches, and you know, again, you still have to be very careful how you tread in those situations, but you know, keep it positive.
Yeah, I know a lot of coaches, I mean, you know, you talk about what their backup plans are, you know, if they were to get fired, or, you know, they started their own business, you know, their own gym, or they go in athletic director positions, or a lot of them will say consultant, and it's not as easy going in and in those situations and earning business. And like you said, getting that recurring business. And I think, you know, the thing that I do, and I know that you do as well, is I try to ask questions. I ask a million questions first, because I want to get an understanding of why they're coming to the decisions that they're coming to, you know, and that's something that can be done internally as well. You know, as a staff, you could ask, take turns asking questions about why you do what you do. And then sometimes that solves itself. You know, if you remove that obstacle, if you remove that barrier, sometimes you're able to find some answers on your own, and you just help facilitate that where they come into that answer on their own. And I know that's something that you've done, you know, extraordinarily well through the years.
Well, yeah. And you've probably been in the same situation as me, where you're brought in, you give recommendations and you think they're damn good recommendations. And then you find out that nothing has changed. Right. Because I think they'd almost just want it to go through the motion of like, we brought somebody in. Okay. Right. We're doing something. But a lot of the time people just do the same thing. And I think as a consultant, you have to be aware of that and just, you know, okay, great. The check cleared. Great. You know, I gave them a perspective. They chose not to do anything, and that's fine. You know?
Right. So, well, I think that goes to the mindset of the person of strength coaches or anybody. I mean, if you're not, if you don't have a mentor, if you don't have somebody that you can get honest, unfiltered feedback from, you know, then you've pretty much done growing at that point. You know, you've got to constantly, you know, just like the same thing with strength and conditioning, right? You got to keep, you know, changing the system or the stimulus so that there's a new adaptation that takes place. And I think as coaches, we have to be secure in ourselves and, you know, to allow that and to be turned around and be open to feedback, you know, and you don't have to accept everything. I mean, like you said, you don't have to accept everything, but at the end of the day, you know, there is positives in being challenged as to what you do, why you do what you do. And I think that doesn't necessarily need to be a consultant. That could be anybody, but you need to have mentors for sure. You're most known, you know, for obviously speed development. I mean, obviously, again, you're a competitive track athlete. You've worked with Charlie Francis. You know, you do quite a bit, even still with, you know, working with individual athletes on different, you know, types of training, whether it be track or football or whatever. From my background with football, there's obviously a big difference between linear track speed and football speed. You know, when you're working with these football players, like, you know, what is a workout, or what's a program look like for somebody that had, you know, like you're running back with the Chiefs or whoever that has to stop, plant, maybe make two or three cuts before they get linear. What are you doing to help prepare them for those types of transitions?
Yeah, I think what I try to establish right away is that, yeah, they are different. And, but the other thing is that they're probably doing a lot of what they need for football anyway. So they're doing the cutting and they're running with a lower center of gravity, right? Just because that's how you have to run in football. If somebody's going to hit you and you're running tall, it's not going to end well. And if you have to cut, you have to be close to the ground. So, I almost say like, look, this is your football stuff here. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time on that. We will mention scenarios where you have to cut or run a route and how you have to do it. But when we train, I'm actually just training them as sprinters because I think that's what they're not doing.
Right.
So they're not running, you know, in the same manner, the same relaxed manner. They're not, their hips aren't rising as much. And their ground contact times are going to be shorter. So if I do that, now I'm kind of filling that cup so that when they go back to playing football, those qualities are there. And I think that's, I don't try and disguise it and say like I'm this football expert because I don't think it's necessary. There's lots of football experts out there. Right. And there's a position coach that they have that'll go over the technical qualities, hopefully that'll go over the technical qualities that they need for their position. So, you know, I mean, can I do some of that stuff? Sure. But I don't, with the limited time I have with people, I'm like, this is what we're going to work on. You know, like with Kansas City, I know that Tyreek Hill goes and runs track in his offseason on his own because that's what he did, right? He was a track athlete. So I know there's things there that tell me, okay, this guy's fast, but then he understands what he needs to do from a track point of view because that's how he got there. So you don't necessarily have to have that discussion with him. But maybe other athletes that aren't doing that have detrained those qualities. So you have to say, look, you have to add a bit more of that. So,
yeah, I think that I don't want that to be missed. I think that point is fantastic where, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, as a coach, as a strength coach, you have to train the buckets that aren't being filled, you know, and if that's linear speed, you know, that's being missed at practice or spring ball or whatever it may be. That's where you're topping your athletes off at. You know, that's where you want to put a lot of your focus and not turn around and be repetitive in stresses that they're already facing. And I think that's as important as anything. And then, you know, obviously, you know, learning the right skill sets. If you're not coming from a track background, like a lot of pro football players are for sure. But you know, some guys aren't. And, you know, top end speed, or I guess you're not really getting top end, but just running mechanics in general is very, very important. I've heard you say in the past, I can't remember where I heard it, but you know, that a lot of purists, they hate the 40 as a measuring tool in an NFL combine. I think I've heard you say that you actually like it because you're looking not necessarily just at the speed, but you're looking at the movement quality and the strain and the efficiency of the movement. Talk a little bit about why you think that it's important to still see from an evaluations method, not necessarily just 40 yards, but that could be a 20 meter, that could be a 60 meter, it could be whatever you wanted it to be, but it is important to see people run in a straight line.
Yeah, I think the whole thing with the combine, and I think we've talked about this for me, is that it's kind of an event that allows you to see how people prepare, right? Can they prepare for a task and can they put in the time? And if you see somebody run not just a fast 40, but a high quality from a biomechanical point of view 40, then you know that one, they've been prepared by somebody who knows what they're doing. They know how to manage their energy. And I think that's the biggest thing. There was somebody from the last combine who looked really, had a very good time, but I thought, okay, this athlete, and I think he was drafted very high. I'm not going to say which team he's with, but you'll probably know. This guy looks powerful. This guy ran a fast time. And I just thought, he just looks tight. Like he just looks like he's achieving that and he's just too tight. And then in training camp, he's had some hamstring issues, right? Yeah. So, you know, those are the kind of things like you have to go into these evaluations and not just look at numbers. You have to look at, you know, how they set up, how they, you know, how they'd warmed up. Maybe I don't know if people are watching them warm up and then how they execute it and then how they do on the next rep. Do they push harder? Do they understand how to manage their energy and tension? So, yeah, I mean, there's some value in it. There's value in everything that happens in the combine. It just might not be readily apparent to the average person. So, right. You know, it, it's you know, we could go into, you know, a 3-hour discussion on if what exercise is good or should they get rid of this one. But I don't know. It's fine. Like, there's a lot of good things happening there.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. We share that opinion that I actually like the combine. I like it for the reason that you said, where it's showing that they want to prepare. They're going to go after a task. I think the mistake that's often made is that they stop training completely like a football player to train to the test, and then they get in the camp and they see a plague of injuries because of that. And you know, everything is good in small doses, right? I mean, I think you got to keep everything in the wheelhouse, and then you know, where you're trying to peaking something, that's when you're manipulating your training variables. But I agree with you on that. You know, you and I share this again, that it's one thing to be a great coach and have all the success that you've had at coaching, but it's quite another thing to give back to that community and feel kind of almost obligated to do so. And you've been doing, I mean, you speak regularly, you put out resources, you got your website that's got great articles and whatnot on it, videos and whatnot. But you're also doing, lately, you've been doing these Zoom calls. I think, I don't know if you've been doing them weekly, monthly, where you're just bringing a collection of coaches together and having conversations. And it's almost like a cup of coffee, you know. But talk a little bit about why you feel compelled to give back to this community.
I think it goes back to what you said about this idea that you have to have these mentors, right? And it's nice for us to talk about that. And I had the fortune of having some good mentors and yourself as well. But I don't think it's always accessible for people, right? So you go to conferences and maybe you get a chance to talk to somebody who, you know, you can learn from. But that's difficult as well. It's very hard to bring yourself to go up to somebody and say, hey, can I ask you some questions? And the worst thing is if they turn you down and say, no, I don't have time for you. But in this, like, you know, the Zoom thing that we're using now, I just thought, wow, you could get 100 people on at once and people can participate. People can, you know, just sit back and listen. But you have a chance, and we always give everybody an opportunity to ask questions to anybody on the panel. And I think it's just a great, like somebody referred to it, like everybody in this room. And that was kind of a cool comment. I think it was Ryan Horn had said that comment. And it's like, wow, yeah, we're actually in kind of a virtual room and you can talk to anybody. So, you know, all I do is I say, hey, if you guys want to sign up, just give me your email and we'll put you on the invite list. And I know I'd love to have you on, Ron, but I know you're like the busiest person on the planet. So absolutely. Hopefully we get you on soon, but I'll drop you in on the list as well. But, you know, it's just an opportunity to connect and learn through conversation, I guess what I was looking for. You're not watching a webinar. You're not watching a PowerPoint presentation. There's enough of that. And even a podcast is very one-dimensional. So, you know, it's pretty free conversation. We keep the topics general and like, hey, let's just let it flow. So we do it weekly. It seems to work well.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I've tried to make it almost every time. And for some reason, it just is always at a time that I can't get on, but yeah, man, I think it's fantastic. And I think you would share this as well, but I feel obligated to give back because of the mentors that poured into me, you know, and so I feel like I owe it to them to do whatever I can to give back to the community as well. But it does, it's time consuming. It takes energy. It takes all those things. And people don't always see that or appreciate it as much. And so, I appreciate it. I just want to make sure that you know that and really, really excited about what you're doing. We had the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I think the best coaching advice I got was from like Charlie Francis in terms of this idea that you don't really always have to say something to get an effect. Like, you know, and I think we're taught to, whether it's always to verbalize like what we're trying to accomplish or what we're trying to get out of the athlete. And I think sometimes you don't have to say anything. You want to see if it works itself out. And that's the best way. If it kind of just works itself out, or you put them in a position or in a drill and it solves itself. And that's tough because you have to be patient, but it usually works the best that way. rather than, you know, saying you have to do it this way all the time or giving them some overt cue that they have to think about. And even with my own children, I find that if I can find ways to do that without telling them what to do, they're kind of involved in the process, the decision-making process, then it's a lot easier. There's a lot more retention. There's a lot more compliance. But that takes patience, that takes skill. And sometimes you got to step away from yourself a bit to achieve that. Cause we all want to be the ones to solve the problem,
right?
But maybe we don't have to be, you know, so that's, you know, that's kind of one of those coaching art things that's very hard to develop without years and years of experience and people helping you along the way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
I'm just like, if you're like me, I have like 10 books on the go. And so, you know, I'm always trying to develop myself in different ways. And so one of the books I'm looking at right now, and I have my bookmarks in them, is The Brain's Way of Healing. So I'm just looking at that in terms of injuries and how people handle it and how the brain sort of impacts that, Norman Doidge. And then I'm looking at another one about creativity called The Runaway Species, Anthony Brandt, David Eagleman. And then there's another book I'm looking at right now is The Storytelling Animal, because I want to get better at telling stories.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's an art to that. Like, you know, there's always somebody when you're growing up who could tell the best stories. And I don't know where that came from, but I'm not that guy yet. So
Me either. Any apps or websites?
The apps, like, you know what? I had Don Chu had said, hey, Derek, you know, have you tried this Dartfish Express app? It's like $5 or $6. And I never really used it. And now I use it more because I can draw lines to show angles and demonstrate things. And it's just on your phone. Like I used to be this guy who had to have these fancy cameras, and now I just use my phone for a lot of the filming, and that helps me to kind of illustrate what I'm looking for. So, I mean, it's great. It's not that expensive. I think Dartfish had to pay like thousands of dollars when it first came out, and now you can get a $5, $6 app. So I use that. And then websites, like I'm kind of like you, where I'm just trying to learn from other sources. So I like have news sites that I've subscribed to where I just want to find out what's going on in the world. You know, I'm not necessarily focusing on strength and conditioning or athletics or even sports for that matter. So whether it's business sites, whether it's news sites, whether it's certain magazines that, you know, I've subscribed to, where I'm just trying to get a look at what else other people are doing, other industries, and how does that apply to what I'm doing? So
I think that's so important is getting, you know, outside influences and then taking some of those principles that have worked in professions that are thousands of years old as opposed to 100 years old and having success with that and applying it to our profession and becoming more efficient as leaders for sure. But well, man, you know, like I said at the beginning, that the amount of work that you do to give back to this community, the high level of material that you put out, and then just the way that you carry yourself in this profession is inspiration, man. And I truly appreciate what you do, how you do it, and just being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Ron. It's great to know you and be able to bounce things off you. So I appreciate that as well.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.